Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 149 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we're talking to Jesse Anthony and Mark Gullickson of USA Cycling, and the reason that we are talking to them is because the 2020 Cyclocross World Selection Criteria has been posted by USA Cycling. For those of you who follow this year to year, and especially last year, this is a very important document for the elite athletes, the U23s, the juniors in the U.S. who want to compete in 2020 in Switzerland at the World Championships. We had a little bit of a dust-up last year with the U23 women and some confusion over what the criteria was and how everything was selected. And that happened really late in the year, which was unfortunate. And at that same time, we learned that some folks missed deadlines and other things because they didn't know about it. And part of this conversation, and I think part of what Jesse Anthony is doing as the new cyclocross manager, is he wants to reach out. He wants to communicate better with the cyclocross community. And by doing this in June instead of December, we're getting all of this information out there now. There's some questions that I see that I wanted to ask Jesse about the criteria, and we were able to talk about those and talk through them. Also, the folks at USA Cycling also provided some questions and answers, and I refer to those, and you can find them at cxairs.com. I have a whole post on the selection criteria, the differences between last year and this year, the comparison between the men and the women, and then also these questions that I asked USA Cycling that complement the conversation that I had with Jesse. So I'd say go over there, check out cxairs.com. You'll get even more information than what is available in this conversation, and it will also make more sense because I refer to those questions some, and it'd be good if you're able to see those actually written down. In that same vein, there, when we get to near the end of this conversation, I ask Jesse a question that is referring to, this is going to sound convoluted, an answer that came from those questions and answers. And in that answer, it talks about athletes chasing points. And I use that language, chasing points. And Jesse, after we went offline, came back and said, hey, you know, I answered that, but I never really said chasing points during our conversation. And listening back to it, I agree with him. I did not set that up correctly. Contextually, I did a bad job of setting up the question and letting him know I was referring to the answers that I received previously from USA Cycling. So I just want you to know when listening to this that that's how my question may come out of the blue, especially since I say it's something he said, the chasing points part, and he never really did. So I know that's a very convoluted explanation for something that you haven't experienced yet, but once you get there, hopefully you'll keep that in mind. What I also would love for you to keep in mind is that this episode of Cyclocross Radio is brought to you by Whoop, WHOOP. Great new sponsor to the Wide Angle Podium. Whoop is a performance tool, and it's really changing the way people track their fitness and optimize their training. I got one of these. I use the CX Hairs discount code that you can use, and I signed up for a year because this is the kind of stuff that really intrigues me. What I get from that subscription is that Whoop is going to provide me with a wrist-worn heart rate monitor. It's pretty slim and really out of the way. It's less than even the Apple Watch that I already have. You get that heart rate monitor. It's a heart rate monitor. It pairs to the app and provides analytics and insights on recovery, strain, sleep. And one of the important things that we don't really talk enough about is recovery and the strain you're putting on your body. All you want to know is about the watts that you're putting out and the intervals that you're doing. Well, there's a whole nother component about that can help you get faster on your bike or more awake in your life if you're attuned to these other components like sleep. And that's what Whoop helps you do. It gives you a better picture of your your overall fitness. You get optimal sleep times based on how strenuous your day was, and track sleep performance with insight into sleep cycles, stages of sleep, sleep quality, sleep consistency. And that's just one part of it. You know, it's also knowing your max heart rate, how many calories you burn, your average heart rate, all of this data. We love data, and you're getting it all from Whoop. Go to whoop.com, you get the new Strap 3.0, and by using the discount code CXHAIRS, C-X-H-A-I-R-S, you get 15% off for 12 or 18 months. And that's going to be over $50, $60 that you're getting to put right back into your pocket by using that CXHAIRS discount code. We are also brought to you today by Health IQ, our friends and partners over at Health IQ. They are going to give you better rates on life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/WAP. Put in that code that lets you them know that you heard about Health IQ from Cyclocross Radio and all the Wide Angle Podium shows. Once that information is in there, you can, you'll have to take a little quiz to qualify. It's easy. You can pick on cycling, but what they are looking for is people who are in great health, like you, who ride their bike, who do all of these metrics that they can look at and say, hey, this is a good risk for us. These are the type of people we want as clients. These are the type of people we want to insure. Life insurance, it's one of these, we say it every week, it's one of these adult things. Look into it, do the research. The best place to go for that, healthiq.com/WAP. All right, I want to get into this conversation, but I also want to let you know if you have any questions about it, any comments. I think this is going to be the beginning of a conversation we're going to be having throughout the season. Get at me at feedback@cxhairs.com. You can also follow on Twitter and Instagram @cxhairs. Go over to the Wide Angle Podium site, wideanglepodium.com. Check out all of the other shows there. We are expanding. We got the parts bin. Zach Schuster from Cyclocross Magazine and myself put out 2 episodes now of Grodeo. That is our gravel racing show. We have a whole breakdown of Kanza. Zach was there. He's going to give you more information than you're going to find anywhere else. I think that you all should subscribe to that parts bin and check out the Grodeo show and everything else on the Wide Angle Podium Network. Also, head over to YouTube and sign up for the CX Hairs channel over there. I got more mountain bike stuff coming out probably in the next week. And then after that, soon enough, we're going to start transitioning over to cyclocross, and I want you all to be on board before that happens. Jesse Anthony and Mark Gullickson, you'll notice that Mark is here. Basically, Mark has been in this position for a long time as the cyclocross performance director. He has a lot of background, and he was sort of there to fill in any gaps since Jesse still, you know, just started this job. But in the end, it was a great conversation with Jesse. He had all the information, gave us everything we needed. Mark, I talked to him a little bit in the beginning and then a little bit at the end. But other than that, it's just me and Jesse having this conversation on Cyclocross Radio, episode 149. Mark Gullickson, Jesse Anthony, let's talk to them, and let's do that right now. All right, Jesse and Mark, thanks so much for joining me today to talk about the 2020 Cyclocross World Selection criteria. Before we get into the weeds on that, Mark, I just wanted to quickly just congratulate you on the national team in the Mountain Bike World Cups. Kate Courtney, I think, is a story that is people know about but can't be talked about enough. And then what I really I think want to say, and that the national team needs credit for, is with resources and finances for domestic teams not really being where we want to, that the national team is sort of filling in the gaps there and making it possible for some of these riders to be in Europe and have performances, and especially somebody like Haley Batten, who's able to go over, you know, not with Cliff but with USA Cycling, and really, really perform at that level. So I mean, it's been a great year, so congrats on that.
Yeah, thank you. It was a great start to the season, at least in those World Cups, and we also had a really good Continental Championships down in Mexico before that. Like you said, our goal is to make sure that our best mountain bikers have the support they need at the highest level competition during the year, and our preference is that they're on a professional team that supports them fully. But the sponsorship cycles go through, you know, ebbs and flows. And right now there's a few more of our top riders that need help over there. Obviously, Kate Courtney is fully supported by her Scott team. And so she's with that team over there. So we didn't, you know, weren't actively supporting Kate, even though we're cheering her on from the sidelines for sure. And it was like, super exciting to see her win those races. But yeah, the others that the other U.S. riders that were there, we were fully behind and supporting, and we're happy to do that when needed. So yeah, it was really exciting to have that success. So thanks for recognizing that.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's I think if people aren't following mountain biking in general, but especially the World Cup, it's one of those things I think over the years has evolved. And if you are a cyclocross fan, then I think that switching over and being pulled into the World Cup cross country format is a pretty easy switch. But talking about cyclocross, Jesse, we haven't really had an official conversation, like recorded conversation. So you know, you got kind of thrown into the fire here when you started this job, pretty much, you know, right before Nationals in the heat of it all. Since that time, you know, what's kind of been your focus, and how has it been just sort of finding your feet in the job?
Great question. Thanks, Bill. First of all, it's great to speak with you, and thanks for taking the time to reach out and connect with us. Just to start off, one thing that I am working on a lot, we are working on as an organization, is communicating better with our community. And so thanks for taking the opportunity to help us do that, because this is really important to us. I definitely was thrown into the fire right across Nationals last year, heading shortly after that to the World Championships. And then directly after that, I went back to California, packed up my things, moved here to Colorado Springs, and have really still been trying to find my feet in the office. Everyone at the organization's been really welcoming and super helpful in answering the many questions I've had. And, you know, I've been working a lot with Mark and with Scott Schnitzbahn in kind of developing what my, you know, vision is for this program. So as far as the cross program specifically, you know, we were really excited to receive that Rafa Foundation grant through the Mud Fund. Tim Johnson has, you know, continued his support with the Mud Fund with us, and so that's been a huge help to us and for what I'm trying to do with the cyclocross program. So yeah, lots of good stuff going on, and that's not really anything specific I've been doing, but you kind of get the idea of coming in here and figuring things out.
What, you know, coming in, just looking at this with some fresh eyes, and honestly not having had the cyclocross manager position that you're in the past, you know, just sort of overarching, what is it that you're trying to achieve? What's like the mission plan just going forward, not only this season, but, you know, past that?
Yeah, great question. And I'm still developing, or we are still developing, the long-term mission here for what the cyclocross program is and should be. And so that's one of the cool things, is that I come in here in a fresh position, fresh set of eyes for myself. And we're really, first, what I'm trying to do is learn the community, relearn what's going on in the sport, and kind of establishing a baseline from saying, here's where we are and here's where we want to go. So obviously, one of the big things for us is growing the sport of cycling as a whole. We believe cyclocross is an important aspect of that, especially in getting people into the sport. It's a very easy grassroots level discipline to get into, and can go all the way up to, you know, the World Cup and World Championship level, and help develop riders both into cyclocross careers and into careers in other disciplines. So we do see cyclocross as fitting into the cycling ecosystem in the U.S. as an entry-level sport on the competitive side. So that's kind of a little bit of the round table, like the round, the spherical goal of it is, you know, help develop this sport to have more reach into the community, basically into the whole country, and help grow cycling from this very fun grassroots discipline.
Yeah, and I think what we've seen is, you know, I think probably when you were coming up, and especially when Mark was coming up, the entry point for cycling was road cycling. That's where it always kind of started. If you want to be competitive, that was really your only opportunity to race in the road. You know, it changed over to mountain bike a little more in the 90s and on from there. But we have seen that cyclocross is this great entry point. It's, you know, it's you're racing in a park. You're usually not going to get dropped, but so far, if people lap you, nobody really knows. You know, there are all these great things that make the pressure less for new riders. What we're seeing now, though, is that people are moving even towards maybe less competitive endeavors, especially if they're not like shooting for a win. So my question for you is, what is your, and I know this isn't what we called above, I just want to get your take on this. What's your pitch to people that said, I think I'm just going to do gravel events now. I think that's where everything's going. And how do we get those people to either give cyclocross a first try or bring them back if they were there in the past and maybe have moved on to other types of competition?
Yeah. Well, so as you may have noticed, I've been exploring a few new events this year. I was at the Epic Rides in Grand Junction, saw you there. And then I was also at Dirty Kamsa with Tim Johnson and Rob DeMartini, our new CEO. So yeah, we're definitely looking into the gravel space to see what's going on there and what people are really latching onto. And it is such a great atmosphere. Like, and I've obviously known that in the past that gravel events were fun. I've participated in a few. And it really is like, that is true grassroots fun competition. And it's funny because very few of them call themselves races, yet the pain faces out there are second only maybe to cyclocross. They last longer, but they're not quite as quite as tweaked. But basically people are out there trying really hard, and gravel is a great space to enter competitive cycling and to get a taste for that competition and you know, racing against your friends and against people you don't know and seeing where you stack up. And we just see cyclocross as another, as you know, a sibling to gravel, where it's grassroots. It's a little less participants. Like, very few people are going to cyclocross races and just riding around in the back of the field until they get lapped. Like, it is a little bit more of a higher level competition in general. But you know, we're looking into the cyclocross space to see how we can incorporate some more of those participatory events and just get people to the events or create events that are fun to attend no matter what your level of riding or competition or motivation is, and just allow for people to come because they are so, you know, easy to put in many different areas, take up a small space. They don't take a lot of money to put on relative to a big event that's going out on the roads. So yeah, and there's definitely a connection there, and I actually don't have a full plan on how we can connect those two, but that's part of what I'm doing in exploring the space out there and kind of connecting with the community.
Yeah, for sure. And it was good to see out there at the Epic Rides. You mentioned that, and that's another one that just, because this is my first year really going to all of those races, and just what I see that they do, which I probably like you as well, want to know how do we do this in cyclocross, is the community engagement. It's not the, you know, get off my front lawn mentality that a lot of cyclocross races go up against. Rather, it's thanks for coming to our town. We're going to have this great event all weekend long. We're going to bring in people who don't know anything about cycling, and they're going to watch, and they're going to have a good time. We're going to have these fun events on, you know, Friday night, and then have a bigger race on Sunday. And I don't know if that's how you feel, but I look at that and I go, man, how can we just like port this over to cyclocross and do that? And then also on top of it, have the sponsor buy in where they're like, yeah, you can win $5,000 if you win this race. You know, it's been a while since we've seen that in cyclocross.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the thoughts that came to my mind is how do we do this? And looking at the model that they run and how much fun the event is. I mean, I had a blast just hanging out there. They do such a phenomenal event, putting their event or their race on. And I think some cyclocross races get it. You know, there are some cyclocross races out there that also have a fun atmosphere, and they have some other things going on in the expo for the fans to participate in. But that's something we want to encourage from an organizational standpoint, is for cyclocross races to be weekend family events. And we're going to explore how we can support that. Obviously, it's really up to the race organizer and the race promoters to kind of go that direction and figure out where they are valuable. And I think that is one of the big things I noticed from these events like Dirt of Kansas or the Epic Rides, is they go to locations where that value them and value the event. And so that's something interesting I think we can support our organizers in, is finding towns, cities, regions that want to have this attractive event in their area and maybe moving the events there.
Yeah. All right. Let's move into the meat of the conversation here. I think that it's out there for people to see, but I don't think there's been any real announcement, if there even will be. These seems, you know, so sort of this annual update of the criteria that makes up the Cyclocross Worlds team. And, you know, I've been able to read through it and had a lot of probably more than you were wanted questions about these things, but let's just start from the top. You know, one of the things that you pointed out, you know, just in early responses that before we started that you're given, and that I see in the document itself, and it's kind of this philosophical change, is that it's no longer the USA Cycling athlete selection criteria, but it's the qualification criteria. And I think that's a big point there, that and maybe a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, Bill, that change started last year. It wasn't really announced very strongly, but the way the criteria was written last year, obviously before I was in this position, was that most of the positions in the criteria were qualifications. So you basically earned a result or earned a ranking somewhere, and they set the bar so that if you're, you know, up to a certain rate from your result, you qualified to the team. And then, of course, there is still the discretionary selection criteria in there, and we can go in more to that later. But yeah, with coming in this year and readjusting and rewriting the criteria for starting a new direction in the cyclocross program, I did definitely want to emphasize that it is a qualification. And what that means primarily is that it's as objective as possible for a rider to get a start spot at the World Championships. It clearly shows the level of competition that we are of performance that we are looking for in international competition, and the types or the performances of athletes that we want to see that are going to go on to compete at the World Championship.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is that we need to make clear, or I do when discussing this, is just the difference between what we consider. I mean, I think we technically would consider all of the athletes elite athletes, but as far as the elite categories, the ones who are not U23 or juniors, would you agree that there is more of a performance focus on that group of athletes versus the juniors and possibly even the U23s, where it can be more of a developmental look at it? Or is that no longer what your focus is?
No, absolutely. We are definitely focused on the performance of our elite athletes. And as the national team and as the governing body of the sport, this is what we want to support. We want to be able to support our elite athletes in their performance at the international level, along with their trade teams, as you kind of mentioned with the World Cup mountain bike program. As the national team, is definitely a focus of ours to support our elite athletes in the performance level. And then, yeah, of course, with the U23 and the junior categories, those are development categories. And we really are focused on opening up the pathway and creating a stronger pipeline and a broader pipeline to get athletes into the sport all the way up to that elite level. And so, yeah, a lot of the support and focus will go to the development program as well.
So on the performance side, so talking about the elite level, the men's elite race, the women's elite race, you all are looking for a team that is going to perform at the highest level. So does that mean if you've gone through the qualification criteria and you have 5 spots, possibly 6 spots, if there's a Pan Am winner in there as well, will you say, can there be a situation that arises and you go, okay, we have 2 people who we think can compete at that level, we're not taking the other 3 or 4? Is that, because there always seems to have been pressure to almost fill the team or completely fill the team, is that a shift that has happened, that is now, no, we're going to take the people who can get a result and that's it?
Yeah. First of all, it's a little different now in that we don't necessarily take the riders. I mean, obviously we plan the trip, we offer the support there. But in creating this criteria with the very objective qualifications, we put the ball in the rider's court. We want them to have control over whether they go over to the world championship or not. So we kind of assess the environment, the racing environment, the international competition environment, and the level of our top athletes. We assess that, put that up against, you know, the international standards and the level at the world championship, and then we did our best to create qualifications that were appropriate for the level of competition of our riders compared to that international environment.
I think that, and maybe I'm just looking at this wrong, if we are as a national team, as a country, are in a position to fill all those spots with there's just this outstanding year. Every spot is taken because they are auto qualifiers. That's one condition. But if nobody, and of course they're going to have at least one, because you're going to have a nationals winner in there, which is one of the auto qualifiers. But past that person who wins nationals and possibly a Pan Am winner, if nobody else meets any of these conditions, then it is a selection. I mean, the second is as objective as you want to make it, there is still a subjective consideration that goes into medal capable and, all of those extra criteria that you have. So I guess that becomes more where that gray area is. If no one meets that first or even third tier, then it sort of comes into that second one still, right?
There's the automatic qualifications, and then below that is the discretionary selection.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, discretionary.
And discretionary selection. So there's only really one criteria for discretionary selection. And as you mentioned, those are for the discretionary selection is aimed at riders who are either medal capable or future medal capable. And that's defined in the document. It's quite complicated. I'm not going to go into it right now because, again, we try to put as objective of qualifications on that and trends of what we're looking at to give the athletes an idea of what those terms mean. And to your point, yes, they are discretionary. So there is a selection there, and that is up to us if we see spots on or see riders that are showing this kind of potential and that have the development trend where, we think it's worthwhile to support them going to the world championship, and we see that this would really benefit their trajectory.
Would that be take into consideration for that elite level as well? So is there somebody who's like just graduating out of the U23s into the elite level? Is that like the type of person that you would look at, or you know, that's kind of, I guess what I'm questioning when we talked before about performance versus development from the elites down to the U23s.
Right. No, absolutely. That is definitely something that we will look at there, as you say. Yeah. And that's probably the best example is a last year or a first year elite rider coming out of the U23 category that performed well in the U23 category, steps into the elite level. And that's a big jump. It's a big, difference in the level of competition there as far as results go. And it's definitely something that we need to consider. If a rider's, just turned 23, but hasn't finished in the top, 20 or 15 or 10 of some of these races, depending on the category, but is knocking on the door and clearly had a trajectory, an upward trajectory as a U23 rider, then that's something we do take into consideration. And then, again, if you do read the discretionary qualification details, it kind of shows that. So that's you're right. That's exactly what it's one of the things it's reserved for.
Just to sidetrack a second, just for some easier stuff. The cost of going to nationals is always something that I think as a community, people don't always grasp the spend that USA Cycling has to make, and then the ask from athletes who don't auto qualify that they're going to have to pay part of that way. It's a little less this year. What's the difference for the? It was $1,600, I believe. The service fee is $1,000 now. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then the other cool thing that I saw in there was that I don't know if it's existed, at least not for the past several years, is podium bonuses. And along with if you are not an auto qualifier or discretionary, who's getting that service fee paid, that a reimbursement of airfare and other travel costs. Just the little decision behind that and those new I think positive changes to the outline.
Yeah, great question. So, the World Championship fee for the non-funded riders went down this year. A lot of that is due to the support of the Mud Fund and also due to a less expensive location. So last year in Denmark was a little further away from Sittard, where our base is, and, just things are expensive up in Denmark. So the cost was actually quite high for fielding the team there. So it's going to be a little less of a spend. And then also, with the support of the Mud Fund, and this kind of trickles in, or the money from the Rafa Foundation and the Mud Fund were primarily focused on rider development or development riders. So those are the age groups that we're going to focus most of those resources on. But that also allows us to spend some of the money that we originally have from the organization a little bit more on the elite side. So that cost could come down all around, and it's mostly triggered by the Mud Fund.
Great. Yeah, that's great to see. Getting more into the nitty-gritty of the criteria, I think one, we had the... We don't have to relitigate the whole U23 women's selection from last year, but within the cycling community and the cyclocross community, that definitely had it upset people on how that was done and how it was selected fairly or not. And I think that when I look at this and I kind of look at the landscape of the cyclocross community, the supporters, not the athletes themselves necessarily, but athletes out there, as we know, participatory sport, the thing that I think that people are going to focus in first and foremost is in the auto qualifiers. And we can just start from the one that for the women, for the men's, for instance, top five at a UCI Elite Men's World Cup in the US. So either Waterloo or Jingle Cross, if you finish in the top five, which is an amazing result, then you auto qualify for the women, excuse me. And then for the men, same thing, but it's top 10. And just first off, the decision to have different criteria for men versus women at the elite level in those U.S. World Cups.
You're asking about the different level of like the top five as opposed to the top 10.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So I think this conversation starts exactly where, or this question starts where you started it, which is that last year we had the same bar set for different categories, and that simply doesn't work for fielding, our best team, for allowing the best riders in each category to qualify. The international racing environment and the level of our athletes within that are different for every category, whether it's elite women or U23 men or junior men, junior women. So every category is different. And we looked at our most competitive athletes and, again, where they fit in that international environment, and made the best decisions as far as where the bar was that we believe is achievable, but shows that the riders are stepping up to the international level of competition that they need to be at to compete at the World Championships.
You know, and I completely understand that when it comes to, you know, we're looking at junior women, first time ever. So they're obviously you want to give them a little more leeway, a little more expansion. U23 women, which again, we've talked about a lot, but also that, you know, are in a situation where, unlike the U23 men, they don't get their own race, will in the future, but until now haven't. So they're always in there with the elite women, and yes, they should probably have a different criteria because of that. There are certainly different circumstances. I guess my question is more just on these elite men and elite women. If we are looking at performance and we're looking at success, why say somebody who finishes against all of the people that they're going to be racing against in Worlds, that it's easier for the men to do that? And easier is probably the wrong word. There are more opportunities for the men to do that than there are for the women. I mean, it's going to be the same. I mean, the top 10 for the women is, even if you think that that field is somehow different, is still a top 10, and it will still be a top 10 at Worlds. I'm still not grasping why that needs to be different for the men's elite and the women's elite. The others, I understand. It's just those two top teams that I don't understand why that division is necessary.
Yeah, and a lot of this will come down to the focus of our resources. You know, as the national team, we have a number of resources we can put toward our elite riders, toward our development riders, et cetera. If we're going to speak primarily about the elite riders here, we want to focus more on supporting our elite riders better. It's something we have not done very well in the past, and so we're going to aim some more resources there. When you look at that, we also don't want to leave any category behind. We really believe in the equity of all of our riders, all of our athletes, and we want to support our best athletes to help them develop, to give the younger riders a space to develop into. And right now, our women are simply performing at a different level internationally than our men. If we have the resources to support 3 or 6 or 20 women, we also want to reference where the men are at and appropriate resources toward them equally. At least as far as, a performance reward progression is looked at. So, does that kind of answer where we're coming from?
I think so. I think the what we are three men talking about this, and I think that that is going to be pointed out. So my question still becomes, it's almost, I understand wanting to allocate resources equally between the men's and the women's teams on the elite level, but at the same time, you're almost punishing the women if they can auto-qualify more under the same standards.
We certainly didn't set any of these results to punish anybody.
I don't mean punish, but I mean I'm saying that you are then taking somebody who has had a great season, a top 10, let's say, finish. You know, I think some of them are even 5 versus 3. You know, there's definitely a bigger range for an elite men's rider to get into to qualify versus an elite women, and it's I'm not trying to be adversarial on this. I'm just trying to make sure that the reason for this comes off as equitable for both sides. Other, if I am in the women's field and I get a, you know, 8th place at this World Cup, I don't qualify for the world's team. If I was on the men's side, got an 8th place in the World Cup, I would.
Yeah. Well, if you look at, we also wrote these according to the history and the progression of the categories. So historically, we had, I believe off the top of my head, 3 women finish on a World Cup podium last year. And I don't believe we had any men finish in the top 10 of a World Cup. So if you look at it by the numbers, we have way more women stacked up into the top 3, to the top 5, top 10, top 15. We tried to set it as, you know, again, we're setting a bar before anyone has even turned a pedal in this year's season.
Oh, yeah.
But we follow the progression and we try to set it so that our athletes that are racing against each other, in this case, the elite men and the elite women, are competing with each other and competing up to a performance standard in the world stage that shows that they are the best in the country to go to the world championship. And with that argument, you could say, well, the best in the country, do you take the top 3, or why don't you set the bar so that the top 6 go, or 7 if you get the Pan Am championship? So we tried to set the bar according to each category with an estimated number of riders to be in that realm. But also, we want to show where to our athletes where the competitive level is and what we want to support and what we want to see. And we're setting the bar and saying, hey, here's what the world championship level is. Like, please, we want to help you get there. And once you get there, we want to support you getting there, and we want to support you in that level. So that's where we're coming from, and it is. Different, and a different number may qualify, or you know, some woman who gets 16th in a World Cup race may not qualify, whereas a guy gets 16th and does. But you know, we are looking more at the number of riders within those ranges, and that's kind of how we picked those levels.
Yeah, and I did a bad job making the corollary between the levels. So for instance, U.S. World Cup, you're looking at top 3. You have to podium for the women's side and then top 10 for the men. I think that seems like a much bigger gap there. Same thing for the European World Cups. You're looking at top 5 for the women versus top 15 for the men. I know, and we can fundamentally disagree on that. And that's fine. I mean, I just want to give you an opportunity to let people know where USA Cycling is in this. The one thing I will say is that let's throw away historically what has been done. I mean, this is kind of your movement going on. If you think that needs to be a change, then maybe that's something to look at going forward. Especially from that 10 difference. You know, I think that would be, if you're looking for that performance, it's more on the men to perform better than to give that shorter range for the women. I fear that this is going to be something that once this is seen, and it's pretty easy to see from the criteria that this is something that more questions are going to be raised about.
Yeah, that's very possible. And, you know, we are one of the top organizations in the world as far as promoting women racing and women's cyclocross.
Absolutely.
There's no other country in the world that has equal prize money across all their UCI events. So as an organization, you know, we really do try to create the most equity in where we put our resources. And, you know, in the development process, a lot of those resources are going to go equally to boys and girls, young men and young women. And I know that's getting a little off track. This is just, it is kind of emerging to your point of where I want to see the program go and where it has been. So when I say historically, I'm looking at results and performance historically. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking at what our goals with the program are. And our goals are to eventually fill these teams like Belgium, to fill them with a bunch of riders who are knocking on the top 10 and clearing these bars and saying, hey, I'm there at this level. I would love to see that. So that's what we're going to build toward. And this is just the beginning steps of that.
Yeah, and let me say that I agree with you, and I think that most of the cycling and cyclocross community applauds USA Cycling for being equal, and I talk a lot about how this country in cycling is leading the charge. I mean, all the way to the, you know, what they're doing in Waterloo with they forced the UCI to basically make everybody in the coming years pay women the same as the men for the World Cup. It's amazing. And that doesn't happen without US cycling. So that's, and it's also why I feel like I can have these sort of candid conversations with you, because it's a federation that has that goal in mind. So I'm not being accusatory here, just trying to figure out where the division lays and why.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, we're really, again, there are these things, you know, there is, the level is different, and we just have to adjust our support accordingly. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And,
there's one other, really point that I want to get to in here. I'm going to follow this up for those listening with a post on cxheritage.com where I asked Jesse and USA Cycling some other questions that I can just put out there that I don't think we need to rehash here. The answers were good and self-explanatory, so I'll be able to share those with the listeners here. But the one thing that I do want to talk about is that in the past, there has been a part of the criteria, you know, in that third tier of criteria. And I think, and maybe you can explain this better, but for people who are still trying to wrap their heads around this, like I was, there is the auto selection, which basically you meet one of these criteria, you have a spot on the team. And then there's the discretionary mm-hmm. criteria, which we talked about. That's second. That goes to, and that can fill the team from there. So you can basically fill all of the selection buckets with the autos and the discretionary, right? And then we could be done from there. If slots still remain, there is this final selection or final criteria. And that's just, you know, and again, I'll have that information on the site, but that's just, you know, It moves it down a level. It's 16th through 20th here. It's second and third at nationals. It's all these little things that can still get you in the door and are still amazing criteria, but they may not be available if those other spots are filled. Did I do justice in that explanation?
Yep, that is correct.
Okay. So my question here, and this is, I think this is one that I could be wrong, I have a feeling it has your fingerprints on it because of, I think, your desire to see more head-to-head versus international competition. The people you're going to be racing against worlds decide who can qualify for the team. There used to be a slew of U.S. UCI races that riders could attend, earn points at, and then in that pool, the highest average or whatever the calculation was, that could put you into that final criteria bucket. That no longer exists in this new criteria. What was the decision to no longer focus on these domestic UCI races?
That's a good question. And part of it is that there are a lot of the races now in the Pro CX calendar are UCI C2s, and there are very few UCI C1s left. One of them is one of the first races in the season in Rochester, which is a great event, but I think that's too far away from the World Championship to be an accurate gauge of a rider's ability to compete on that, again, the international level at Worlds. The other one is going to be at Jingle Cross, which will be heavily attended by European riders. And so, again, that doesn't really give us a gauge of U.S. riders competing head-to-head, necessarily without a lot of other factors involved in the race. And then the last C1 this year is going to be in Cincinnati at the end of October. So we're getting toward the end of the later part of the season. That is, another high-level race out there. So that was a pretty easy one to put into the World Championship qualifications and say, hey, here's one of the biggest races in the country. It's got the most points and the most prize money, or the C1 level points and prize money. And again, it's getting into the second half of the season. And then we have the Pan Am Championship, which is obviously a very big event, and the National Championships, which are a big event. So we just tried to pick a few select national events to put in the criteria. And as far as there's so many double weekends of UCI C2 racing, as the NGB, like it's hard, it's not a position we want to put races in where we say, oh, we're going to pick this C2 over that C2 as a world selection. That really, shows favoritism to one event over another, and that's tough for us to do. And really what this comes down to is that we need a national series. National series would really give us the platform and the stage and the focus for the sport to really showcase what our elite riders are doing and how they're racing against each other. And I looked into a national series from our organization's standpoint, and it's just not something that I think we should be doing. This should be a private promoter and organization putting on the national series. It should be a private entity. And we want to certainly support it, but that's what we really need to see the domestic elite riders racing against each other head-to-head in the most competitive environment. And so between Cincy, Pan Ams, and the National Championships, we kind of pick the three highest-level races in the U.S. in the second half of the season, and we expect to see kind of a showdown with the U.S. riders there.
Yeah, I think if I put together a super mix of all of the we need a national series conversations I've had with people inside of USA Cycling and out, it'd be hours long. We'll see if it ever happens again. I am not hopeful at this point, just to seeing where we're at with resources and sponsorship and everything else. But maybe, but it does bring up a question. Yeah. In one of your responses, it seemed, and as a not to be biased here, but putting on my race organizer hat, I am one of the organizers for DCCX, which is a C2. You mentioned not wanting riders to chase points without a national series, and with the UCI cracking down on existing rules that they're now enforcing as far as what C1s, have to do to exist. It worries me that I don't know what the landscape is for an elite racer what the goal is anymore in this country. I know this is out of this. This is more just a philosophical questions, but that's what I'm sort of grappling with now. In the past, there had been a couple things like I'm going to go to these different races. You know, nobody thinks that they're holding the race that somebody's coming to chase points in, that it's an easier race. Nobody who puts on a UCI race has that mindset. They want to see good racers at their race. I mean, that's what we all want. But now if that's off the table, that it really doesn't go towards a Worlds thing, you're really, I guess, racing for a spot in the grid on Nationals. In Nationals, it doesn't, that's the part that just from a bigger, like outside of this selection criteria that I'm having a, that worries me a bit. And that's when I look at like the Epic Rides, which isn't even a USA Cycling series, and go, okay, well, they're doing something. Is cyclocross going to go in that same direction? You know, what's the,
yeah,
what is the, what's,
well,
the incentive?
So, to answer that last question, I really hope that we do go toward that.
Sure. But with federation, with sanctioned racing though, right? I mean, that's unsanctioned racing as far as USA
right.
Cycling goes.
It is unsanctioned, but you know, it's still racing, and that's what we support. And of course,
yeah,
we want the cyclocross series, and we're going to support it and sanction it if and when it happens. But yeah, I mean, those are great examples, like we talked about earlier, of what events should be. They should be fun. They should be attractive for a lot of people. They should be have a great atmosphere and inviting. And we're going to start supporting that type of event promotion. And you know, that's something I'm working on. I'm having a lot of conversations with a lot of different people about is how can we support that? Because, you know, essentially we can't run every cyclocross race in the country.
No.
But how can we support race organizers like yourself? How can we guide you, or what do you need from us to go that direction? And you know, the sanctioning is pretty simple. It comes down to permitting and insurance and officials. And, you know, there's certainly ways that we can support and work with our events around those things. And we have, obviously, the permitting and the event staff here that's working super hard to provide the best product and support for all organizers. So we're going to continue working on that side. And then from my side, I'm going to keep having conversations and exploring what we need to do to get a national series going and to support the events that are already out there, because everybody's part of this ecosystem. And one thing I noticed immediately when I came into this position and kind of put my eyes or started getting re-involved in the cyclocross community is that there's so much energy in cyclocross in the U.S. The sport is thriving. There's tons of people participating in it. There's cross series and cross races all over the place. It's awesome. And what they're lacking is connection. And that's a big goal of mine, is to connect events, connect the community, and to communicate with everyone. So, you know, conversations like this are really big. These are really important to us. And, yeah, reaching out to the community and talking to everyone out there and seeing what's going on and what we can do, and then coming back and hashing it out with our team here. And we have this, a lot of people and a lot of resources here that are working on how we can support everybody. And that's, I think, what it comes down to is that we need to support our community. We need to be connected with them and involved. And from there, I think we can really help the sport and the events grow.
Yeah. Just to finish this off, I want to circle back around to what I was briefly talking to Mark about, and just bring but put that into a cyclocross perspective. I mean, looking at we have just such talent coming up on in the juniors, in the U23s, without a consistent, I hope that's okay to say, European program. What are the plans to I think we can all agree, especially when we're looking at these C1s that have disappeared and just C2s left, that maybe the ground to develop these riders is longer stints in Europe and racing against that competition. Is there any move towards, you know, with this Rafa fund, with the Mud fund, to have a bigger presence for the European season?
Yeah, I get two answers for that. First answer to that question, yes, we are going to run a program that's pretty well, very well supported in November for development riders for over 2 weekends of racing. And then also from Christmas time all the way through the World Championships, we're going to run support program over in Europe. So there's definitely a lot more emphasis into supporting our riders over there. And then the second way I want to answer that is that I firmly believe in developing on the national level first and getting a lot of experience here and developing the level of racing here before going over to Europe. The levels is quite broad in the U.S. actually. And when you look at the performance of our development riders over in Europe, they're there. They're racing at the front of the bike races. And that's awesome. That's something that we want to see. And that's something that didn't exist when I was, you know, at that age racing over there. So that's something I'm super stoked about. It's amazing the momentum and energy and progression that the U.S. has made there. So I think that does speak to the development level of riders here, is that the level at the top of the, in the front of the U.S. bike races is really high. And so we want to definitely support the racing here and make sure that the riders are at a very competitive level here and progressing well, learning a lot, and overall developing before we bring them to Europe. I don't think the answer is, racing is kind of spread out in the U.S., so let's just bring everyone over Stittered immediately and race them for 2 months there. I think that's a level you have to be at a certain level in the racing, and then obviously a certain level of comfort traveling and experiencing something totally different. And especially at that time of year in the winter, it can be really tough to be over in Europe mentally. So we certainly don't want to burn out the riders. But I see progression from the U.S. to Europe, and I want to continue to support that and support the progression from the grassroots level in the U.S. into the more competitive national level. So one thing I want to implement is just a more clear pathway and a broader pipeline of riders to go from the grassroots level all the way to that world championship team.
Great. Awesome. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for talking. Mark, I know that you kind of left this up to Jesse, which was great to get his view on this, but thanks for sitting in as well. Anything else you think that we didn't cover, or you just want to talk about here before we finish up?
From my side, I think Jesse did a great job. He's, like you said, he's sort of giving him a clean slate to work with. He's got a lot of history in this cross program with precedents that were set, and we are sort of encouraging him to, you know, start anew and give his own personal direction to the program. He's got a lot of good input with Tim and the rest of us here at USAC, but he's taking good ownership of that program. I think it's definitely going to move forward with him in charge, with him thinking about cross all year. He's got some great athletes. Just to touch back to the point about the selection with the women and the men, I think Jesse and I, and we can all see a really strong women's team that we're going to field at the World Championships, and we're not trying to make it harder for them to make the team. It's just the landscape that we're in. Our women are so good on a super high competitive level against the rest of the world that it dictates a higher standard for them. And even with that very high standard that we set for the women, I think we're going to have quite a full and extremely competitive women's team. And nothing against the men, because they're working super hard and we have some great athletes there as well. But even with the sort of more open criteria for the men, it's harder to imagine that we're going to have as strong a men's team, even with the selection that's written. As it relates to the mountain bike side and all of our disciplines, it seems like a trend that our women are more competitive in a lot of ways internationally. And our resources have definitely shifted from as recently as 2 or 3 years ago. It certainly is you know, 10 years ago. We spend way more resources, way more of our energy on making sure that our women aren't left behind and have the resources they need. And I think that's reflected certainly in my mountain bike programs, and it will be reflected in Jesse's programs as well. We follow the talent, and that's sort of what the why the landscape looks like that now, because our women are so competitive.
Great. Thanks. All right. Jesse, anything else before we go?
No, I think that's it. Bill, I just want to thank you again for the time and also reiterate that, you know, a big goal of mine, a big mission with this program for me is communicating with our community and supporting the community. So I would love to hear from people. Please reach out to me if you got any questions, any thoughts about cyclocross, whether you put on a race or you race yourself or know of some racers that need to be on our radar, you know, especially young riders. It's been really fun for me to be at some of these different events, and I met several riders, even at Dirty Kansas, that were cyclocross racers, and it's just great to connect with everyone. So I want to reiterate that I'm here, and I love hearing from people, and I want to talk to everybody and make sure that everybody's getting the support and getting their questions answered.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. To both of you for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And there you have it. Episode 149 of Cyclocross Radio in the books. Thanks to Jesse Anthony, Mark Gullickson for taking the time to have that chat. I hope you all got a lot out of that. If you have questions, I'm sure you will. Comments, feedback of any kind. feedback@cxhairs.com. That's where you can send those to. Also, please go to whoop.com. Get yourself started on that program and get 15% off on me. CX Hairs. Use the code CXHairs at whoop.com. If you're looking for more discount codes, you can go to Health IQ. Get yourself set up with some life insurance. Health IQ/WAP. That's going to get you started on there and help us out. And then finally, please head over to the Wide Angle Podium Network. Check out all the great shows we have and consider donating. We are a listener-funded podcast network. So we want you to be part of that family, and it helps us continue to do what we do. Finally, go on over to YouTube, youtube.com/txhairs. Subscribe, watch some videos. We're going to be doing a lot more and want you to be on board from the beginning. All right, we'll see you next time, cyclocross friends.